Coming up on podcast 1153, a Saturday special interview with Robert Llewellyn from Fully Charged. Stick around, a good one today. Well, also on the podcast today, we're talking about where Fully Charged started and how he grew it, how they moved into outdoor events thanks to COVID, and the next one that you can go to being in September here in the UK, but they are coming around the world. Why he had to miss Fully Charged USA, the first one they did. He spills the beans on that. The first time he ever met Elon Musk. That's a great story. And also why the Japanese weren't impressed with his timekeeping. It's a Saturday special interview, part of our YouTube series that I'm doing with my pal Nicholas Ramo, EV Nick, and the live streams that we are doing. Now, Robert started Fully Charged as a one-man and a camera hobby. It grew into live events, clean tech, consumer education, car reviews, and so much more. And Robert's the reason I started this podcast. When I first found Fully Charged all those years ago, maybe like you, I binged myself on every previous video he'd made, and I couldn't wait for the next one that was coming out. Well, then I started looking for EV news every day to fill those gaps between his videos and satiate my desire to learn more about electric cars. And then I realized I could make a daily podcast out of all the stories I was finding. Wouldn't compete with anyone because no one was doing anything like this all those years ago. I'm not sure too many people asked who were doing a 7 day a week EV news podcast. If you find any, let me know. I don't think anyone else is crazy enough to do it. Well, I've met Robert a few times over the years and never had a chance to talk in such depth. Hopefully you enjoy the show that myself and Nick did with Robert. Enjoy this one. Evening, Robert.
Good evening.
Hi. First of all, look, but most importantly, how are you? It's been a funny old 18 months. Are you, your family, everyone well?
We're all well. We're all fine. I mean, my wife and I are very lucky. I think we acknowledge that because even last year during the full-on lockdown, you know, we've got a garden, we've got a house with a garden, we can be outside, we live out in the sticks, so we could go out for walks. So in the grand scheme of things, we've had it easy. And also we're old farts. We both had our jabs and everything a long time ago, you know. And now, I mean, the worry now is I don't even want to talk about it, it's boring, but all the young people we know or the friends we have who've got kids at school, it's just going rampant through all the kids. It's not old people like last year. It was definitely all the old farts, but now it's kids. It's really, yeah, no. But anyway, that is what it is. We've all been through it, and it's not. I've got nothing interesting to add.
Well, as long as you're okay, Nick. Good evening. We are loving this series of chats with the 12 over the course of this year. The 12 most important, influential people in the EV and energy industry. So it's a big one tonight, right, Nick?
Yeah. Well, I mean, obviously everyone knows who Robert is. And let's be honest, if it wasn't for Robert, probably myself or you probably wouldn't have entered EVs as early as we did.
Absolutely. The reason I got interested. So Robert, your first video, well, on the Fully Charged channel was 11 years ago, not including the pilot. I think it was an iMEV or something else. I don't want to harp on about the past all the time, but, you know, that is only 10, 11 short years from where you were then to kind of where you are now. And, you know, it's an overnight success in the last 10 years.
Yes, exactly.
You know, a lot of hard work. Do you ever have those moments where you sort of, you know, when the world is quiet, that you look back and think, oh, crikey, what a ride?
Well, I mean, it has been peculiar. I mean, I think it's probably, you know, I think one of the things that maybe gives me a slightly different look on it is that I'd done like broadcast television for the previous like 25 years before that. So there was that sort of experience, but this is so different, and that's really why I wanted to do it. So it took so long, even before Fully Charged started, to be able to do what we're all doing now, what's now very straightforward and simple. So, I mean, I set up a company in the year 2000 called British Web Broadcasting, and I set out with other people to do TV on the internet. And it was incredibly, we were very brave and exciting, and it was an absolute disaster. It was complete, from a business point of view, total disaster. It cost lots of money and the problem was people watched it. So this was comedy clips. This is a few comedian friends that I did things with or interviewed with or did stuff. And it was fairly rubbish, but a lot of people watched, and the more people that watched, the more it cost us because we were paying for the bandwidth. We don't even hear those terms anymore. What's bandwidth? You know, but we had to pay for that. We had to pay for the servers that delivered it. You know, that whole thing was, so every time, so the analogy was, you open up this really cool grocery store and a customer comes in and they're really happy and they want a can of beans, and you give them a can of beans and you give them some money and they walk out.
Brilliant. Brilliant.
You pay them. You pay them to take the beans away. So it wasn't going to work. But that was so pre-YouTube. And that was when I was doing a British TV show called Scrap Heap Challenge, or an American one called Junkyard Wars. And a lot of the kind of early, my early exposure to the notion of really hybrid and electric vehicles came out of that period of time, because I was meeting engineers from all walks of life, you know, not just automotive, but the ones that were, particularly in America, the automotive ones would talk about battery management systems, electric drivetrains, battery packs, battery coolant. You know, you're going, what the hell is this? It didn't make sense back then. This is like 2001, 2003, that era. It didn't, why would you bother? You know, what you mean, a forklift truck? What are you talking about? You know, a disability vehicle? I don't know. You know, that's just didn't make sense that that would be a car then.
Yeah.
But it was, it came out of the computer industry, very much a Californian thing. It came out of people who made laptops and tablets and phones. They understood about using batteries, how you use them, how you manage them and control them, which is what's kind of been the kind of main catalyst behind the resurgence of electric cars now.
Well, Scrap Heap seemed very much like, you know, real engineering, much in the way that, you know, Ed China does on his shows. I can't talk for the American version that you did, but at least for the UK version that we're all fans of, it seemed to spend a lot of time allowing the engineering to take front stage, and then of course, you know, competition at the end, a bit of entertainment and all that kind of stuff. But that kind of realness was, of course, what YouTube is based on. People don't want sort of, you know, you go to the cinema to watch, or maybe we don't anymore, but, you know, to go watch the new blockbuster movie. But people want real. So, well, of course, when you started, it was, you know, a man and a video camera, right?
Yes,
and it was
very, just, very crude.
You know, you, real, honest.
Yeah.
You know, still people in the TikTok generation now, people still love that. So is that kind of, I want to put words in your mouth, one of the keys to the success of the channel, that it's just really real?
Yeah, I think so. And I think it was, and I had that. So in a sense, that was the kind of, if you like, the unfair advantage I had, is I'd spent the previous, I don't know what, 15 years talking to cameras as opposed to human beings. And so that wasn't such a jump for me to make, you know. It was certainly absolutely led by the technology. So when I first started making TV shows, which would be the mid 80s, you know, and we'd shoot something in a studio and then go into an edit suite that cost the same as a house or more than a house then, you know, like 10 houses. And then you'd edit it on really rubbish VHS machines that were all tied together, and they go, and it took hours. It was agony. And then that process gradually became, you know, the cameras became cheaper. You could edit on a laptop. You could edit on a phone. You know, once that happened, it changed things so dramatically. So, you know, then it's only someone who's my age who's going to have lived through that and then gone, oh my God, I can shoot something on a phone. I mean, that is just bonkers. You know, that damn thing is the much better quality than any camera we used on Red Dwarf up until 1998. It's much better, much, much more dense picture on that, on a little bit of stuff. It's bonkers. And those cameras cost £140,000 that we used to shoot, you know, on the studio cameras. And they were like, these are pro studio cameras. I mean, yeah, there's a lot of subtle stuff you can do, and the lenses are different. I know that. But the actual picture quality is crazy that's happened at that time.
Yeah. And some of the first videos you were shooting on YouTube were actually for Carpool. And you can see a lot of your early sort of Carpool videos were talking to people who were involved in the EV industry. In fact, one of the first ones I saw was one with Dale Vince.
Yes.
Going to a wind turbine.
Yeah, yeah, which is still there. We saw it the other day. No, and I mean, that came out of, I think that's what I was trying to say about all the phones. I've got a bit lost with it, but the technology facilitated the what we see now. And I mean, that was very much my idea with Carpool, was that, I bought two, we used to call them suicide cameras on Scrap Heap, because they would tie, the camera crew would like tie them to the machine and then the machine would fall to bits or explode or fall over, and then you get that shot of the camera going, you know, that and so they didn't care if they got broken. Well, they had two old ones that were still functioning. They were like lipsticks. They were very small cameras. So they had a tiny little sucker. So I went, God, these fit in a, I had a Prius. They fit in the window. You don't, not even in your way. And I was trying that out and then using microphones that always, always got pulled off by a seatbelt so you couldn't hear, you know, all that stuff. But the first two times I did that, it was my wife and I driving to London, and it's the most revealing video of a marriage.
Oh, God.
You could possibly see. So we do dates, we do diaries. She's driving and I'm going with her diary in my diary. When, on the Tuesday, when are you? And her, because I don't, you're driving along. And it's only then I realise. So her face is there. I'm not looking at her. She's driving. I'm not interrupting. I'm saying on the Tuesday, the 15th, it says you're going to the thing. What you know? And her face is being, oh, twat. You know? But I didn't see it when we were actually in the thing. I'm quite happy. And then I took my son to see some mates to do skateboarding, and I'm so glad I've kept that. It will never be revealed to the public. He's such a the torrent of offensive comments coming out. He's about 14 or 15 years old.
Oh my goodness.
And he's got Tourette's, swearing Tourette's. Just got just blabbing out. But it's really revealing because what's obvious is we both forgot there were cameras.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, very quickly. And that was the beauty of carpool, was that you would effectively interview someone who might be on their guard or feel awkward, but they're basically having a lift. Like Stephen Fry, I drove him to work, you know, picked him up at the BBC, took him to ITV. He was doing that journey anyway. Luckily, he just was on constant send for the whole thing. I didn't have to ask him anything. Didn't have to be clever and ask him questions. But, you know, that, and he was just looking out the window and, you know, just chatting away. It was very normal.
So back in the early days of that, it was basically just, I presume, you recorded it and then you editing it. And that was same with Fully Charged. From, you can tell if you look at some of the really early Fully Charged videos, it's basically Robert setting up a tripod and Robert running to start recording. So
very crude,
obviously from today, you know, back then when it was just you on your own, to Fully Charged now with a full crew, production crew, the live shows, which we'll move on to in a bit. How did it go from just being Robert and a camera to Robert, someone editing, and then Robert, a business? Is it just sort of blown you away?
Yeah. I mean, it did take 10 years. So, and it went through some painful, you know, adjustments in that time. So it hasn't been like a straight trajectory, because the thing that I've learned from that. So up until that point, I'd generally been an employee of a production company. So, you know, Red Dwarf or Scrap Heap, how do they do all those things? You get hired. And then you do, you know, you do, Robert, save that for your kid's wedding day. Oh, is that what my son? That would be good. If he got married, showing that video would be legendary. It is so obscene. It would offend a lot of people, would be really properly offended. Exactly. No, he's very sweet. And he's now a very mature and brilliant. He's a cameraman. He's amazing and editor. So it happened in a very stumbling way. But as we were talking about, Mark Taylor Hankins was a very critical figure in that, because he got in touch with me suggesting that asking if I wanted any help with editing.
You know. That's nice.
Yeah. Because basically I went, oh, there's me standing in front of a car. Oh, you can't really see it. It's out of focus. You can't hear it because the microphone wasn't on properly. You know, all those mistakes you make on your own. And it did make a big, so when he first shot something, suddenly it looked like proper telly, you know, it looked like, oh God, you can hear it. God, I'm talking, you can hear it, and it's in sync, because quite often the stuff I did that wasn't quite synced up, you know, it was a little bit hazy. So that really changed things, and then it kind of grew from that. And then it was thought about how can I can't keep doing this. It was too tiring. It was too expensive. Mm-hmm. I was paying for it myself. So I was paying for it by doing other jobs. So I'm lucky that I can get things like after dinner talks or corporate events and those sort of things. So I can earn my living doing that outside of regular old TV work. And so that's how I've kind of funded it for a while. And then it gradually became a sort of more regular thing. I mean, it's just a very slow process. And the painful bit was when we sort of turned it from a bunch of mates doing it, or, you know, almost doing it for fun, but getting paid something, but I didn't get paid. It reached the point where, hang on, I am really working hard on this and I'm not earning a bean and it's costing me money and it just isn't going to work. And it was a sort of crisis point it came to where it either had to become a business or I just carry on making it on my own for fun. You know, that was the choice. And I was really torn because I was quite happy to make it on my own and not have anyone working, you know, just me doing it. And it would have been, the quality would have dropped so dramatically. Mm.
You mean there's no money in making YouTube videos, Robert?
There's only costs. Yes. Yeah, it's shocking, isn't it? It is amazing. Some people make money out of it.
Well, the scary thing is, I mean, the channels that do make a lot of money out of YouTube, stuff like that, they haven't got a lot of planning. It tends to be fairly easy to make content, where if you look at the stuff that you guys produce, it's really high content.
A lot of research, yeah.
Research, it getting to places. I mean, especially in the early days, you were filming, traveling to places that, I mean, now obviously car companies are a bit more sort of lenient with budgets flying you out. But in the very, very early days of filming stuff, you must have been absolutely throwing money away.
Yeah. Oh, without question. Yes. And also there wasn't that much. I mean, I think it's also important to, you know, now we're putting out very regular episodes, but back then it was when someone rang up and said, you want to try this? We've made this electric Land Rover. And I went, all right, I'll come and have a go. You know, and then maybe nothing for 2 months because there wasn't anything. What am I going to do? There's no, you know, there were so few electric cars around. You know, there was a lot of hybrids and plug-in hybrids, a lot of that side of it at that time. So it was very different. And it was it's really only been the last sort of 4 years where it's been a kind of full-on, it's now a full-time job. I get paid now, which is great. And, you know, it's a really complex beast to run because it's got lots of people involved. And it's not that, you know, there's a very large number of people involved, but not all full time. So a lot of people are on, you know, 1 or 2 days a week, they work for Fully Charged. So in PR, in research now, in production management, you know, we've got a production manager because that's, you know, no, I never know where I'm meant to be, what time I'm meant to be there, where it is, and what we're doing when I get there.
now we're talking about Robert's confusion. Robert, there's a great story I've been told from a good friend of ours, Mark, one of your cameramen back in the day, and he said, ask Robert about when he went to Japan.
Well, I went to Japan. Basically, I went to Japan for a night. If you can imagine anything more crazy, I mean the pandemic has really shown me is how insane that was, whether I used to do that. I remember I went to Seoul in South Korea for two nights.
Was it the Nissan Leaf launch that you were going to?
Yes, in Tokyo, yeah. Was that what it was? It was the new Leaf, the new version. I can only just remember it because when I got back to England, I didn't have any jet lag. I was tired, I had a shower, went to bed, slept like a normal person, woke up in the morning like a normal person at the normal time. But my brain was mashed.
Yes.
And so what I can't quite remember what happened. So you fly out there. I think we flew out there one in the day. We got there. We went out for an amazing meal. Yes, I'm remembering it now. Proper amazing meal with really rude waiters in a proper Japanese restaurant in Tokyo. I mean, it's like, and you're blown away. You go, oh my God, this is, I've never been there before. You know, it was really exciting. And then you go to bed and like, why am I going to bed? It's the morning. I'm wide awake. So I'm reading and watching Japanese telly and then eventually fell asleep. And then there was thundering hammering on the door and a horrible noise, which was the alarm I had on my phone was from when I did a program about submarines. And it was the sound of an emergency dive in a submarine. And it had been going for 2.5 hours. Without me hearing a thing, and it was loud and it was right next to my head. So I slept through the most important, and Japanese people really appreciate good timekeeping and they hate being messed around, and the coach was waiting for me, so I got on that coach with pajama trousers on underneath my trousers. So literally I can't even remember, I mean I can only just remember it, and that was to go to the launch. So when I got to the launch, I then found a gentleman's restroom and got dressed properly and was in an absolute
state. Wow.
But then at the end of that day, we then got on a plane and flew back. You know, it's crazy.
Yeah.
I believe Mark said that the Japanese and the Nissan people were very worried that you might have been dead.
Yes. Because I was in the hotel. They were really, you know, the noise, when I finally woke up, the noise was like people about to barge the door down, you know.
Wow.
And they were horrified. I was so apologetic because, you know, they are so, they looked after us so well, and they were so, they're so polite and so lovely. But when it goes wrong and when you're late, there's an, you see the other side of the Japanese character, slightly more annoyed.
Yeah, I'm not sure I'll ever be allowed into Japan with the things I've said about Toyota and their self-charging hybrids.
Yeah.
I think I'm on some sort of red list.
I think we all are. I don't think you're alone. There's quite a big crowd of us.
Oh, no. And occasionally at Nissan as well for taking so long with the Aria. But there we go. We like them, really. Just come on. Just give us the cars.
If you think 20 years ago, what they did was absolutely, in a sense, what Toyota did in the 90s was as big a change to the automotive industry as what Tesla have done in the last few years. You know, it absolutely challenged that thing, is that we can make a car that uses hugely less petrol. I mean, I went from a Volkswagen Golf R32 to a Prius. The R32 Golf, maybe 15 miles to the gallon if you were careful. And the Prius, the first time I drove it, I was over 70 miles to the gallon. I mean, that was like, that is amazing. And it was a great car. I mean, I think it is, you know, they could have made a really good electric Prius by now, and it would be a really popular car, because they've, whatever else is going on with the PR department, they make really reliable, solid cars. They don't make rubbish, you know. No, it's heartbreaking. I find it really upsetting, because that, there were particularly, the thing that really just finished me with it was the TV commercial for whatever hybrid it is that was shown in America. Slightly different cut. We had the similar thing here, which is the, I don't know, the Auris hybrid going through the desert, and there's all period vehicles of different periods, and it's overtaking all of them. And in the American one, it cuts to a man standing by an electric car, holding the cable in and looking at his watch, because he's got to take, you know, and that one, and it's like 10 frames. It's really brief, but it just plants that. If you've got an electric car, you have to wait.
And it's almost like they haven't realized that there's a thing called the internet where we can all see these adverts.
Yeah, we all see all of it. Yeah.
And I do worry that Toyota are almost going to sell themselves short, because eventually they're going to have to start selling electric cars. And when they've been telling us all, you don't want an electric car, you want a self-charging hybrid.
But there's also reading the room. Do you know what I mean? There's also a case of, you know, VW have said it in one of their many recent events, you know, very overtly, we need our combustion cars to fund the move to electric, but we'll do it as quick as we can. So, you know, just read the room. Whereas Toyota have said, well, our customers have told us they're not ready yet. So, you know, when they're ready, we'll go. And at some point, as a responsible corporation, and they've got the talent, the engineers to do it.
Of course they have.
Just like the boardroom just need to, you know, of all big companies, sometimes need to do maybe what's not best for the bottom line, but with the events of the last week or last month with, you know, record high temperatures in Canada, North America, with floods that we've seen across.
Rain in Germany. Because I have some friends who live in that area. They're okay.
No way.
It's really, really horrendous. Really horrendous.
All right, guys, hang on there. Coming up on the podcast very soon, we'll find out why taking a selfie with Robert can sometimes lead to a near-toilet emergency. Sounds intriguing. Stick around. We'll get to that on the podcast soon.
Anyway, let's move on. And you may not know where you are day to day without a production manager, but you do know. On the 3rd, 4th, 5th of September, you must be somewhere. Yes. And so, Fully Charged Outside. Oh, we're all so pleased it's back.
It's so exciting. I mean, it is. What's wonderful is, because we've been worried about it since, you know, you can imagine, for a long time.
Yeah.
You know, since we cancelled it last year, and everybody, the key companies that had booked spaces last year rolled it over to this year, which was amazing, because, you know, that could have gone horribly wrong. There's been a lot of work behind the scenes. But what is amazing is in the last 2 months, it's just, you can tell it's just a sort of attitude thing. It's now effectively sold out in terms of companies appearing there with stands, and, you know, car company, they're all there. It's all gone, which is amazing. Absolutely. Because there was a long period where no one would make a decision. And I can totally understand it. You know, we're interested, but we'll see what happens with lockdown and all, you know, you imagine it all the way through till about really the end of middle of May. We started to sense it. Now it's sold out. We're selling tickets. So it's looking very hopeful. It'll be hugely bigger. Well, over 15,000 tickets sold. So, you know, I mean, that's insane. I can't believe it. And, you know, there's a huge amount of planning going in now to make it COVID safe, because it's outside. there's a, you know, it's a, on a, in a very big area. We have a limit each day of how many people can come. So there won't be 15,000 people on one day, you know, to be, it's spread out over the whole weekend. But, you know, it's, and there are still tickets available. I should say that. Yeah, it's not that the tickets for people to come along are not sold out. It's the stands. I'm just imagining Dan. Don't say it's sold out.
he was very happy that Martin mentioned the dates and we didn't ask you, I think.
Maybe we should have done. But yeah, I did know
the dates. I've written them down.
If you're interested in this area, and what interested me a lot about the when you're at Silverstone is I knew there'd be car stuff, and you know, my podcast is mostly about cars. I do a lot less than you do on energy and things like that, and the surrounding bits. But was how much stuff at the show was the other bits that I didn't realize I was so interested in. So, you know, for 40 quid or just over 40 quid for 3 days, you know, people can book their hotels you know, just come and, cause you won't see it all. I mean, if you can get around it in a day, but honestly, if people are watching this, take your time, go and talk to people on the stands and just go and immerse yourself in that world. And also, are you having more than one stage again this year?
Yes, I think, yes, there is. And I don't know the details of that. I'm just looking at my notes. But there
is. Again, there's a main
stage and a smaller stage. Yeah,
there's always something to watch.
All the way through the day. Yeah, and amazing people coming to talk. And that is extraordinary. The caliber of the speakers we have and of the participants and people on panels and all that are really wonderful. And we've got, you know, brilliant presenters. So Helen Chersky, Maddie Moat, now Jack Scarlett. You know, all we'll all be presenting two stages, as Dan rightly says.
Two stages.
I was about to say there's eight or nine stages. No, there's two stages, but that's, you know, so it's so there'll be breaks on one, but there'll be something else going on the other, which was incredibly successful. And I kept my skepticism has been proved wrong all the way through this process, because Dan said, no, people want to come see. And they won't. They just want to all hang out and chat to each other and go and see the weird electric cars and that. No one's going to come in the theatres. Every single event in every single theatre, packed to the walls, you know, absolutely. But because the calibre of the speakers was wonderful, you know, really, really good. The first year at Silverstone was brilliant, but it was a tough one for me because we hadn't arranged a way for me to get from the stage to the gentleman's toiletry facilities. So there are some selfies that people took that year where I'm in genuine bladder agony. You know, desperate to get to the loo, but didn't want to be rude. So they were going, can we do a selfie?
It's funny you mention that, because I was filming up the first year in like the media area.
Oh, yeah, the first year,
which is where you came to get away from downstairs. And I was just sort of filming. And in the background, you're talking to two chaps and you're literally crossing your legs.
Well, there was nowhere up there. If there was a loo up there, it would have been fine. We did talk about getting a bucket, but we didn't do that. I want the public to know that never happened. But yeah, no, that was so. The second year, I had a way around. I could get off the stage and go around the back to a loo. You know, just you know, you only anyway. But that so those little teething, but the good side of that was it was just an amazing event, and people really, really enjoyed it. Because I think if they all came along and went, oh, it's a bit rubbish, you know, you wouldn't do it again. It would never, no one would come. But the general response to it has been so positive, and it's such a great place to see, you know, there's going to be every car you've ever heard of or seen anything about is going to be on display there, and some more, which we can't talk about, and some other things that are just, I want to keep a surprise. Brilliant stuff coming.
And is that why?
Sorry, Martin. There's some product launches that I know are happening at the event. One from a big company that I think Robert, you probably know what it is, but it's a very big large product.
Yes,
very good for storing stuff. Which is going to be announced at Fully Charged Live. So I mean, it's an event where products are launched. You know, it's a big tech event for even companies that make stuff. That you know they're actually launching new products.
No, it's incredibly exciting, yeah.
Is that what drove the move from Silverstone down to Farnborough, the need for more space or things like that?
Well, yeah, because when we first talked about it. We went into so there's a hall at Farnborough that is bigger than your brain. I mean, it's just massive. It just goes on forever. You can't, you know, it's almost got its own atmosphere. So we thought, what a brilliant place. We can do everything inside. And that was, as you can imagine, late 2019, yeah. You know, just that, then yeah. You don't have to worry about weather and everything. But then, you know, I think eventually, let's say next year, we'll be able to do both inside and outside. And it would be, from the point of view of the fully charged Lou, not a good mental image. That's Jonathan. Thank you, Jonathan. That really helps.
Yes.
but yeah, so that was, it was partly that. It was also that we got more support from Farnborough as an organisation than we did from Silverstone. And the actual the individual people we met who helped us at Silverstone were fantastic, but as an organisation, it really didn't lend itself to what we were doing. And as you know, there we are talking about electric vehicles, vehicles that don't burn fuel, whatever, and what's going on right behind us is amazing.
There
was loud combustion engine cars going around, you know. So
yeah, which I, you know, I thoroughly enjoyed because I like racing. So I'm kind of taught. I was working at the weekend at Silverstone just gone, and you know there is that total two parts of my brain that think, you know, this should be not the way it is, but I still love watching it. I don't get that same buzz from Formula E or electric racing. And I do that drama, that noise, that theater. So I'm completely torn over things like maybe we'll all drive cars day to day that'll be electric and we'll use petrol to keep classic cars on the road.
I think absolutely.
Or racing.
I want in 100 years time, I want there to be Formula One with really loud engines. I think it's really important because, I mean, if you think the global carbon impact of a Formula One race, you know, literally the cars on the track, immeasurably minuscule. It's just nothing. It isn't a thing, you know. So if that was it, I think you're absolutely right. I really appreciate that. And I mean, I used to go to Silverstone as a kid and I loved the saloon car racing, particularly when they at that time were what we would now call American muscle cars. So they were Ford Thunderbirds, Mustangs, you know, all those big fat American cars, not going very fast, actually. When you think about it, they weren't that fast and they went around corners hopelessly awfully. They were absolutely useless. And it would always be the Mini that would win the race.
Yeah, because it'd be quick around the corners. Yeah.
And the Dodge Charger that made enormous amounts of noise. Fabulous. And it went up the straight like a dragster. And then it got to the corner and just slid all over the place. And the Mini went around the corner.
Dear. Well, there we go. So moving to Farnborough, which is, you know, obviously, you know, it is what it is. It is where it is. Some people will travel less distance. Some people will travel further. But it'll be a fantastic experience of doing that. In terms of calling it fully charged outside.
Yeah.
What does that mean for people watching this? Is it all outside? Should we bring our?
There will be a lot of shelters because a lot of the people who are building stands are doing stands that have covering. So it's not, you know, if it does rain. And actually, it could be a bit of willful memory, but I mean, I always remember being annoyed with, like, when my kids were at school, that we'd go away on holiday in August and it would rain every day. And then they go back to school and it would be lovely. The weather might go, why can't we go on holiday now? I hate school holidays. Why, you know? And, you know, often September in this country is actually quite a pleasant month. So I'm fingers crossed that it will be nice. But yeah, certainly. Yeah. And the reason we couldn't call it, we were going to call it Fully Charged Live Outside. But then when you see that, what it says is Fully Charged Live Outside. The peculiarity of the British language, of the English language. So, so that's why it's now just Fully Charged Outside. But I mean,
it says what it is. So people understand it. You know, it's safe. It's outdoors. Yeah, it's safe. Wear a mask. Don't wear a mask. I'm still wearing one. I don't know if that's...
me too. If I go in a building. And actually, what's interesting is, I thought, oh God, I'm going to be so embarrassed. I'm going to go in because I'm going to carry on wearing it. You know, I'd made that decision and I've been in a couple of supermarkets and a couple of cafes to get a thing. Everyone's got a mask on. It's really interesting. You're not seeing people not wear them, which is quite interesting, I think. But anyway,
And the other part of Fully Charged Show is obviously there's going to be merchandise there. So I presume that Dan's already arranging face masks with Fully Charged logos on them, ready to be.
I wonder. I honestly don't know, but I'm sure.
Well, Brolly's. I mean, let's be honest. If it does rain, you're going to sell out of Brolly's straight away.
Yeah, Brolly's is a good idea. That is a good idea. But then I can see that Dan just said a mask with Robert's face on it. That is not a good idea. with my face going.
just the bottom of your face, though, so it just looks like we've got your grin.
Because I've got one of the, I've now got a visor thing. You'll see it in an episode coming up when I'm in a truck cab with someone else, with a driver, and we're both wearing those sort of clear visor things.
Yeah.
That is quite weird. I've put that on and going, am I really going to go in a shop with this? No, it's just, I haven't made that step yet.
They have them at my son's nursery, and I swear they only wear them because, you know, three-year-olds will just want to throw sand at you
imagine.
Or squirt paint. So actually, yes. I might get one just for when he's next in the bath, really, just to stay dry. Yeah. But sorry, Nick, carry on.
I was going to say that the other thing about Fully Charged Live, there's always been the problem for vegans or vegetarians is there's never been any food options. And obviously, when people start buying EVs, a lot of them start thinking of their overall CO2 footprint and reduced meat.
Yeah,
some people become vegan, some people are vegetarians.
Yeah.
Is there now going to be some vegan options at Farnborough?
There has to be. Basically, there has to be. So there's going to be so one of the slight difficulties with Silverstone was that they didn't like other caterers coming on. They had their own contracts with caterers, and we don't have that problem at Farnborough. So yes, I think we're going to be catering for all needs, because I'm a vegetarian. I don't, you know, I think it's very important that that's covered. But I'm, and it's certainly something I've discussed with Dan in great depth. I'm just seeing if he's making any.
He's put no food.
Yeah, no food. No food allowed.
No food. He's obviously joking, but.
fasting live outside. I think that's very specific just to me. Yeah. Because otherwise, because I always spill something down my shirt. So that's always a problem. I need a bib.
When you go to Fully Charged, if you're watching this, a reminder that the first time I was planning my trip, I was like, oh, I'll charge my car somewhere near. And of course, Silverstone's pretty bad for that anyway. Yeah. But just a reminder, don't think that you're going to turn up and there'll be bags and bags of chargers, you know, all free. So try and make your plans that way, which is, I think, you know, battery ranges are getting longer on
EVs.
Getting longer, yeah. You know, it's...
And there's a lot more. There's a lot more charging infrastructure around Farnborough than there is around Silverstone. And we're definitely working on supplying some charging on the site. You know, that's a big part of the thing.
Yeah, if somebody turned up in their, you know, their Twizy or their 22 kilowatt hour Zoe, then go ahead, plug yourself in because you need it. You need the charge. So what was it like when, you know, Dan came to you and we featured him on this show before and started saying, you know, hey, let's do one in America. Let's do one in Amsterdam. Let's go down under. Did you think he was crazy? Or
I certainly did to start with. And I definitely, because he went to America, well, I guess over a year before we did the American show. And I thought, and I gave him all my contacts, people I knew in California and people that would be supportive and interested, as you may have heard, in California. Didn't know anyone in Texas. And then he comes back and he's going, we're going to do it in Austin, Texas. I'd never been there. What are you talking about? I mean, that's redneck oil country. Where, you know, you drive your electric car, parts me, I'm going to blow your head off, boy. You sure look pretty in that little Nissan Leaf. Apologies to any wonderful American viewers, but because Austin is absolutely not like that. I mean, Austin is a very progressive town, and it actually worked amazingly well. And I mean, I was absolutely staggered because I was really skeptical about that. I said, we don't understand the American market. It's totally different to here. Blah, blah, blah. You know, it's not that they're not going to go. We don't know anything. And there were people driving from Vermont. If you look on a map, Vermont is not very near Austin, Texas. It's right the other side of the country. And America's a big country. So people drove thousands of miles to get there. I mean, absolutely staggering. And it was a great success. So it was, that was sold out. There were, again, amazing speakers there because there's, you know, really, really good people, some of whom viewers will know from YouTube and various things. But, you know, that was excellent. I, of course, wasn't actually there, which we did discuss briefly before we started tonight. So I'd been unwell just before the Christmas before. Oh, my wife's just saying goodbye. She's leaving me. I've loved you, darling, for many years. So you go out the road.
Okay. Brilliant, brilliant.
So I'd been unwell, I guess, when it was in February, wasn't it, in Austin. And I'd been very unwell in the early December the year before. I was very lucky to be very unwell and in hospital about 3 months before COVID hit.
Of course.
If I'd been 3 months later, it would have been a very different story. And I'd sort of got better, but was feeling a bit jobby still. And then, you know, I think a long flight and jet lag and everything just knocked the wind out. I mean, it was just so, you know, if there's something like that and you don't go, that's disappointing, but you're still at home and you knew you're not going. But I'd gone there really keen to be involved in it. And I just couldn't take it. I collapsed the day before, you know, I was put on a plane and flown back.
Yes, I think it's
very disappointing. But, so next time I'll be there. But thankfully it went, as numerous friends have said, it sounds like it went better without you there, you know, which is quite possible.
Maybe the key is that you know, hand it over and like, well, of course it forced, you know, Dan did a bit more, continuity stuff. And now he's even featuring finally on screen.
Your
management partner in crime, if people don't know, for a long time, he's been the silent voice and brains, your partner behind Fully Charged, sort of running the business side of it, but now doing a bit more as well, which is brilliant. Yeah.
He's done a whole series. Amazing. He's done a whole, because he knows that. It's so exciting because he knows that business backwards. That's where, when I first met him, was at a kind of energy conference which he was running, and about home energy systems and solar panels and batteries and all that. You know, that's his passion as to how... You know, well, exactly the same thing. How do we stop burning stuff in our houses as opposed to in our cars?
He did describe how he met you as if it was an escort service. He said, "I paid to meet Robert."
Just left some money on the bedside table and left.
This is giving me a very scurrilous reputation.
It really is.
I'm a very respectable gentleman.
All right, we'll stick around because on the podcast very soon we're going to be talking about Tesla's recent decision to open up superchargers to everyone. Robert's a multiple Tesla owner. What does he make of that decision about sharing the superchargers with the rest of us? We'll get to that and a lot more still to come on the podcast today.
So we're looking forward to that event, and we can't wait to see just everyone. I say everyone together, it sounds like it's sort of some sort of chummy club. It's not really. A lot of people who came to the Silverstone events weren't EV drivers yet. Were you surprised how many EV curious turned up?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I know the figures for the first year. So it was over 75% of the people who were there didn't have an electric car. But that was now 4 years ago, getting on for 4 years ago.
Yeah.
So now I'm sure there'll be more people who do have electric cars. But in a sense, if you've got an electric car, you're going, well, I've got one. Why do I need to go and see? And I mean, I think there's still I still think the majority of people who are going haven't got one, and some people will never get them. They don't want a car. They want a bike. So there's so many electric bikes there, scooters, all that sort of stuff, motorbikes. But, and also, you know, I think a really critically important part of this whole transition is not the private car. It's everything else. You know, so if there were no diesel vans, you know, if every plumber had an electric van, every electrician had an electric van, if every grocery delivery, every Amazon delivery were electric, and they are going to be electric so much quicker, you know, on a big scale than private cars. And the charging infrastructure to support that is going to be installed much faster because it's a business thing. You know, I mean, it's already happening. I mean, I think it's one of the, there's two big Amazon distribution places in the UK that are now 100% electric. Their vans, all their delivery vans that do the local deliveries are electric. And that's going to be, you know, within a year, that will be really ubiquitous. There's so many. I've got an electric minibus here at the moment, which we were going to be filming and we can't film it this week. But, you know, it's great. I've been to the shops in it. There's plenty of room for your groceries in an eight-seater, or however many is, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 10-seater.
Wow. And that's what's really cool, is that it's no just longer just about the standard car in the driveway, but we get to talk about two-wheeled stuff, vans, funky stuff. One of the most watched videos recently is the Arrival video that you made. Just hundreds of thousands, if not millions of views on that. They're in the news today for doing a deal of 3,000 of those to a company today. So they're having, you know, big success. And that's what I'm really looking forward to most about coming as well, is just kind of widening my universe a little bit.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know about. Yeah. You know, I was talking to someone at the last Fully Charged just about home storage and stuff things like that. I'm like, this is really interesting.
Yeah. So, well, and heat batteries, you know, when I first saw heat batteries, I went, what do you mean heat? But, you know, I should have said, what do you mean heat? Like, no understanding, but you know, that you store electricity as heat rather than as electrons. and you use that to heat your home. So in this country, on days that is when it's not like this, of which there's quite a few, you know, you need heat. And if you can, and it's that thing that I've learned with having batteries here. If I can shift the power I'm getting in the, from the sun and store it and use it now. So at the moment, what you're seeing here, everything that it, all the power that is allowing me to broadcast, to be on here, to have everything, is all coming from batteries that was from the sun today. There's no, we haven't used any, I haven't used any grid electricity now for 9 days, not one electron from the grid, which is unusual. You know, it is this time of year. It's possible. It's not, I can't do that all the time, but at the
and
moment.
You've got like, but you've got two power walls, right?
You've got two power walls and nearly 6 kilowatts of solar. So, you know, it's, it is a lot. And I've charged cars, but I charge the cars in the day. I charge the cars now in the middle of the day.
Yeah.
And the sun's at its highest point, and I can then add, you know, 50 or 60 miles to the car each day.
Brilliant.
So has Elon asked you to go around and sign all the unsigned batteries for him?
I get so easily led away, led astray. But yes, no, I've cleaned it off. My battery doesn't have a terrible fake signature.
It's that's an interesting thing, actually, because, you know, you're a multiple Tesla driver and owner, and yet they are the one name in the industry. So, you know, the car shows of old, and even, you know, still today, you know, a lot of money will be spent on big, whizzy, fancy stands and promo people, and look at what happened at Goodwood and Electric Avenue. Absolutely amazing. Tesla removed themselves from that usual world, you know, for good and bad, I think.
Yeah.
One of the reasons people love them so much. But, you know, we do know that, you know, they won't be there in the same way that other
car
makers.
Company, no.
And it's that, I find that frustrating because, you know, but then again, maybe it's the reason people love them is that they do things differently. So I don't know.
I mean, it must be so galling for other car makers that spend money promoting their cars, and then there's this one, and then I'm talking sort of globally. So then, you know, you hear of, I don't know, they give the car to Harrison Ford or Tom Cruise so that he can have. And we do have a Tesla zone at the site.
Oh, good, good. Yes,
The one I know about, because I know someone who knows him, is Leonardo. I've never met him. Leonardo DiCaprio has, the last time I heard, 4 Teslas, different Teslas. He bought all of them for full price. There was no discount. There was no mates rates. There was no giving him one for PR. They absolutely will not. So, what, you know, I know people go, oh, it's all right for you. You get given Teslas. So not.
Really? They're not free? I'm amazed. What?
Robert, there's a question I've always wanted to ask you and always wanted to know. Have you met Elon Musk yet?
Oh, yeah, I have. A long time ago, twice, once, you know, a nodding sort of acknowledgement. But a long time ago, I met his, I was at a Tesla, I would say the second generation Tesla Roadster. And it was at a tiny event in Knightsbridge in London at their little, tiny little showroom. And there was probably only 50 or 60 people there. And he was definitely not a public figure then. I mean, he wasn't known outside that very microscopic world. So I knew who he was, but I didn't, when I went in that room, I didn't know. And a woman came up to me, who, a young woman, and was very chatty because of acting. So she said, oh, I loved you on the telly. And I used to do this. And then I suddenly recognized her. She, because I'd been to the movie with my daughter, the St. Trinian's film, that's Tallulah Riley.
Oh, so, wow.
And I had met her mum because her mum's an agent. So there was a kind of very tenuous connection. And so she said, oh, come and meet my husband. At which point, I'll be honest, my heart sank a bit because Tallulah Riley is rather a beautiful young woman. And it's very unusual for me, an old git like me, to get beautiful young women coming up and being all chatty. So I went, oh, can I meet your bloody husband? She was married to Elon Musk. So then I was introduced to him and he went, oh, hello, it's lovely to meet you. That was the full extent of our in-depth conversation about the technology. But so I have met him and shaken his hand. But that was, I wonder when that was, probably 2011, 12, somewhere around then.
Yeah, I'm just surprised he's never been on Fully Charged. Is there a planned interview? Are you going to try and get him on for an interview?
There was a lot of talk a while ago. It's a long and bitter story. So there, if you go into a Tesla showroom, it's quite possible you'll see me and my house and our solar panels and our power wall because they filmed here, and if my, I'm almost loath to even mention it because if my agent knew I'd done that, she would go insane because we didn't get paid a bean. And they say, oh, we're not paying, but we had 14 people here. they set up a kitchen in this in my old studio, and they used gargantuan amounts of electricity, running huge lamps all around the house. You know, they took over the house for 2 days. We couldn't really live here, do anything else. And I didn't get a fee. Now, normally, if that happens, even if you're not on telly, if they take over your house, a film crew takes over your house, you get a facilities fee. If nothing else, it might be like £300-500. We got not a bean. But the deal was, you can go to the Gigafactory and maybe meet Elon. Yeah, which was like dangling a little fish in front of a cat that's tied down and can't get up. You know, so, and then, of course, it never happened. And it's never, and that was, that's a lot of it to do with logistics and actually being there. But at some point, we might be able to go to the gig. There was one time we said, they went, brilliant, we can go to the Gigafactory, you can see around everything. You can't film anything. Well, there's no point me going then. I'll stand on a mountain 2 miles away and go, I've just been around that factory, you can't really see it. And it was great. So, they're not the easiest of companies to work with, but they're all lovely.
Yeah. Well, but again, it's one of the reasons that I think people like the fact that they do things their own way. And they don't seem to give a damn about, they follow their own path. And that is, that's interesting. Hey, so some news this week that they're going to open up, and maybe they won't, maybe they will, the supercharging network to other car makers. We don't know which ones yet. Maybe it will, maybe it won't happen. It could be, just a story that Elon likes to stir the pot occasionally. But as a Tesla owner yourself, I'm not a Tesla owner. It seems like that's one of the best ownership experiences, is that you turn up, it just works. They're only used by people who have your car, so probably not vandalized, damaged, mistreated. Is it going to be a bit weird for Tesla owners turning up and there's a bunch of different cars blocking it, and I've got a queue now because there's a so-and-so car over there? Or do you not mind that?
I mean, from an ethical point of view, I think it's really important that they do it. From a personal, selfish, misery guts point of view, going, why are all these people using my chargers? There's definitely an emotional element of that.
That's how I would feel.
Yeah, it's a really difficult one, because they've invested. You imagine what they've spent. You might see 12 charges in a car park outside Reading or something, and you go, that must have cost some quid. That is nothing. There are thousands of sites like that all over the world.
Yeah.
All over the world, all over China, all over Australia. I mean, I've been out in the Whoop Whoop in Australia, and there's a little shop with a tucker there and a bloke outside, and it's bloody hot, mate. Yeah. And there's 15 Tesla superchargers there. I mean, there's not that many Teslas in Australia. They've really gone out on a limb with that. And across America, it's unbelievable. If you look at the map, how many there are. So that investment that they've made, that leap, and against a lot of people being critical, and this is never going to work, and you can't drive far in them, and all those things and nonsense. I've driven to the south of Italy and Oslo in Teslas without a second thought about charging. Second thought about, where am I going to have a wee, and can I get a sandwich? Lots of, but not where you charge, because it was so easy. It was just absolutely inconsequential, the charging was. I don't know. It is difficult. It is a difficult one. I mean, what gave me a huge amount of hope was the new rugby services when we went there.
Oh, amazing!
It's just amazing. So there's a whole row of Tesla superchargers as a common sight, and there is another row of amazingly good, really reliable, very fast, rapid chargers that aren't Tesla, that anyone can use. Now I'd prefer to see that, and eventually, then open up the whole thing. And then, what would be good is if it's just, say, and I'm guessing it's going to be something like Mercedes that will do it, but that Mercedes can adopt and use the Tesla supercharger network, and they finally learn, a legacy car maker finally learns, what the drivers want, what the public want. They drive up to the charger. Let me explain it to you, all these car companies. And you take the wire and you put it in the car and you walk away. You do nothing, nothing else. No cards, no special thing, no membership, no have you joined this, no app, nothing. I don't want to do anything. I want to plug the car in and walk away and forget it. And it charges. And I'll pay for it. Happy to pay for it.
Yeah.
But that's what I want. And that is what GridServe are doing, bless them. I mean, that is brilliant. If they can get that system to work, that's the best news I've heard about electric cars in 5 years, that there are other systems that will do that.
And that's the thing, that the less barriers you're putting up for new owners, the more likely they're going to adopt it. And it's like my dad, for example, the worst tech person known to man. He's even worse than Johnny Smith. He is awful. And we had to buy a car for work, for traveling in. And I said, right, it needs to be electric. You're not having anything else. I thought if I buy anything else but a Tesla and tell him how to use a charging app, his face will just go.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's going to be the main thing that I think all charging networks, I think Ionity can do it, but they don't do it yet.
Yeah, it's called plug and charge. And it's, it's a protocol that, look, I have a huge amount of sympathy for everyone, you know, because Tesla designed the superchargers themselves and the software and the cars.
And the car, everyone, they all work together. Yeah.
For everyone else, you've got companies that make the chargers, you've got the CCS protocol that lives on top of it, and then plug and charge, which is the billing bit that's bolted onto the side. And then you've got a million different car makers.
Yeah.
And even in America, where Electrify America have just plowed through $2 billion to put those states, now they're running out of money, if you believe Reuters' report last week, and want more investment because it's so expensive to do that. And yet even they're owned by VW, and you would think, well, VW would say, well, look, here's the like prototype versions of the Taycan, the ID3, the ID4, go and try them. But they're not I'm sure that happens to a level, but I know there's been frustration even over there where like they don't get the cars till the last minute. And then when they go on sale to the public and someone goes, oh, it didn't work.
It didn't work. And they always blame the charger. If you bought a car, you always blame the charger. It's an absolute fact. 99% of the time when a charger doesn't charge a car, it's the car, not the bloody charger. You know, it's a real, such a hard one to do.
I think it's just the best thing about the Tesla experience is, not that it I'm is. An owner, you both are, but it's just, you know, plugging in, it just works. So we'll see where that goes. Anyway, a bit of news for the show tonight.
Yeah.
We've got a couple of minutes left before we go. You seem like, obviously, the wind, you know, was taken out of our sails last year for everyone, but it just seems like you're back on track now. New presenters coming in, live shows. Is there, again, put words in your mouth, there seems to be a real buzz again around that kind of forward momentum with Fully Charged, heading towards a million subscribers on YouTube.
Yeah, I mean, it is exciting. And I mean, it is, I think that from a very personal point of view, the thing that I'm really pleased about is the other presenters. So, you know, and this is not that I don't want to stop doing it, but it's so lovely when an episode goes out that I haven't seen. I might have seen it before it goes out. I will have seen it before it goes out, but I haven't seen the process behind it. So it's like when Helen does something, she's researched it. She's found the people that she wants to talk to. The crew have gone and filmed it. I haven't gone there. I don't know anything about it. And I watch it and I go, this is brilliant. This is great. And I've had nothing to do with it. No input, no talk about it at all. That is a glorious, I feel that for me is a really big achievement. And in a sense, you know, in the next, say, 4 or 5 years, I'm pretty old and knackered, and it's very tiring doing it. And
you're vintage, Robert. Vintage. Come on.
Sorry, yes. But, you know, it isn't that I want to stop doing it, but there were, you know, what I would love to be able to do is, you know, top and tail shows or introduce series or things like that. You know, as I get a bit older, it would be nice not to be doing quite as much. So that was the double savagery of last year was, you know, I'd been ill, I'd got better. And the whole point of the whole way we were going to structure last year's filming was that I wouldn't do that much. Robert's going to take a back seat. And other people. And then what did I ended up doing? Doing 94 programs in a row.
Wow.
Because I was basically the only one, you know, in a sense, from the point of view of the company, I was free. You know, and then so I was doing car reviews in the garden and, you know.
I also get the sense when I see you doing the car reviews that you don't enjoy them as much as, say, some of the other projects you do. Like when I saw you do the project at, I forgot the name of it now, the digging the big hole.
The geothermal stuff, the Eden project. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so the Eden project, you could see you were genuinely, you were like an excited school, you know.
Yes.
I'm going to play, they're drilling a hole, you know.
We're on a school trip to see a drilling rig. No, I mean, you're absolutely right. I think I reached a point last year where I'd driven a lot of perfectly good sort of compact SUV crossover electric cars that kind of blurred together. You know, there wasn't like, I didn't drive one and we go, that was really rubbish, you know, or this one was absolutely brilliant. They were all kind of okay. And I just thought that is a really unhealthy thing. And Jack's understanding of cars, his enthusiasm for them, his knowledge and his ability to assess them is so much better than mine, you know, so that I'm really happy for him to do that. And there's still going to be things like the minibus I've got at the moment, I'm really intrigued by that because I don't drive minibuses as a general rule. So I'm, you know, I'm, it's a very different experience using that. So I am interested in that. And any kind of weird smaller cars, like the, you know, there's a lot of them, there, a lot of them will be at Fully Charged Live, but the, you know, that stuff, I, the Microlino or the Microlino, I'd love to have a go in that. That sort of thing is like, oh, that is, that gets me excited. But your average family sensible electric car that people, you know, will buy is less thrilling for me, I think, you know, just yeah.
I've yeah, been I mean, in a lot I mean, of them now. I work in the car industry, and I can tell you now that pretty much every single car drives exactly the same, but just looks a little bit different.
Yeah. yes, exactly. Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing that I think works so well about Fully Charged. When you look at the presenters that you've got, they all have their own little niche in their own little area. Like Helen's, the way she explained lithium and all the I mean, if anyone's
those are great. Those two videos, amazing, exceptional.
It's like watching a BBC documentary on.
It really is.
Everything. Yeah, it really is fascinating.
No, I mean, like, aren't there? You know, when you think that that shot on what effectively are, you know, DSLR cameras, we've got really good lenses now, and I can sense that makes a difference. But, you know, by really young crew, they're amazing. And their ability to, and it's because I could, you know, maybe frame those shots and maybe even get them in focus, but their eye for that and their way they structure the edit is way, way, way beyond anything I could do. And that's what's wonderful is we've got one or two young lads who are working on the show who are learning to, you know, that, you know, we've actually now kind of organically developed a process where we're training people to do a really wide range of stuff. You know, it's a very high skill level that they've achieved. And I think that's amazing. And we've been able to pay them while they're doing it, which is really, you know, I'm very proud of that. So, I mean, I think that is the kind of behind the scenes achievement I'm really thrilled about. But my main ambition now is to make sure we keep going, and we have brilliant presenters that cover. And, you know, the other thing which we haven't mentioned is the people who aren't in the UK. So Elliot in China, I mean, like, that is amazing. But now we've just finished shooting a thing with a wonderful man called DK in Korea, because he just pounces on, you know, they're test driving the new Ioniq 5 we first saw through DK, because he chased it down the road to where they had to stop and charge it. And then he took pictures of it, and it was all covered in camouflage. But this was 6 months before it was revealed. So he's really on the case there. And he's just been to see, you know, even a jaded old git like me, a breathtakingly beautiful next gen that what Hyundai are doing next. They're amazing. What Hyundai are doing, amazing. So to have someone there, we've got Ben Sullins in Chelsea in America doing stuff for us. I'm going to get the name wrong, so Dan will shout at me, so I won't say the name wrong. But an amazing young woman in the Netherlands who's a racing driver who I've spent hours talking to, and I can't remember her name. Sorry, Dan. It will come up any minute. and another amazing woman in the Netherlands. I'm just hoping.
We're about 2 minutes behind.
Oh, Stefan.
There we go.
Stefan Cox in the Netherlands. Go. See, and I even did a slightly Dutch accent when I said her name, which is really offensive. And Molly Pettit in Norway. So those are really critical people. And the thing I love about Stefan, viewers might not know, is that in Rotterdam at the moment, they put up the biggest wind turbines that they're currently installing out in the North Sea. They put it up at the Rotterdam docks. It is a 20 megawatt wind turbine. And when you think of the first wind turbines you might have seen when you're driving up the motorway, they might be 500 kilowatts or a megawatt, 1 megawatt. This wind turbine is 20 megawatts. The blades are 110 meters long. The tower is 250 meters high. It has a lift inside. You couldn't climb upstairs. Stefan is really scared of heights. And she's going up it.
Oh, God.
She said, I said, you don't have to go up. She said, no, I'll go up. It'll be good.
Brilliant.
I wouldn't bloody go up. But to get to those, normally you'd have to go out on a ship and go out, you know, they're out on in the middle of the sea. But they've actually put one up. I think it's up there for like 2 years. I mean, they're testing gearboxes and things on it. So they can.
Wow.
But well, they are so big. That side of stuff, I find that big engineering that has been developed in the last 10 years, particularly offshore wind, is staggering. Just really staggering.
Let's get you in a helicopter again as soon as possible. And,
yes.
That was a very long time ago.
Yeah, that was long, but we've talked about going out on a ship. Well, I'd love to go out on one of the ships that are installing them, because they're not little boats. They're massive, you know, huge ships that take the wind turbines out and do the servicing of them. You know, would be one. It'd be a really interesting show that we can make about that. But anyway, but hopefully next year, probably now, we'll be able to do that.
Well, look, we've used up, we've gone over time this evening.
Oh, sorry.
We appreciate, it's our fault, we appreciate very much your time. Although your wife's gone out now, so you're a man
She's
of leisure.
She's gone out, I can just talk for the rest of the week.
You're a man of leisure this evening. You can. So thank you so much. Check out fullycharged.show. I'm sure the hundreds of people watching this have got their tickets already, but if you're me and, you know, put things off, like, oh, I'll do that tomorrow, don't. Do it now. Get it done. And then we will see you there. Fullycharged.show is the website. And so we'll all be there. I'm doing a session on Friday with Jack as the host. So I'm going to be talking about getting your first EV.
I'm doing a session on Sunday. So if you are going to come, make sure you only book Sunday and Friday.
Friday
and
Saturday.
Don't worry about Saturday.
There's nothing happening on the Saturday.
Don't worry about it. So make sure you get your tickets. We'll see you there. It's going to be wonderful. And if you see Robert hurrying everywhere with his legs crossed, stop him. Stop him for a selfie and have a good chat with him.
Someone's going to do that now.
And if anyone hands him a bucket, I'll give you a phone. No, I won't. Someone might will.
Brilliant.
I might use it. There we go. Anyway.
Robert, look, thank you so much for your time this evening. It's been a real pleasure. And we'll see you in September.
Excellent stuff. Looking forward to it.
See you soon, Robert. Right. Thank you.